side.
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of All Joking Aside. Today we're going to be talking about... Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Greg? Hey, Greg, buddy. Are you okay, bud? What's going on, man? Greg, we're broadcasting.
The topic you picked.
Does it make you sad?
This is your way of telling me that our podcast is over and our friendship is over and you're moving on from this.
You know what?
You're the king of subtlety.
You know what? You are so insightful. Oh, okay. Let's go ahead and compose ourselves.
Okay.
The topic is moving on. And this is episode, I'm sorry, did I say it? Maybe I did, 82. And I am one of your co-hosts, Daryl Mendelson. And besides me here is my other co-host.
One, the former co-host, Gregory Cohen.
The crybaby.
The crybaby.
I thought this would be kind of an interesting topic because as we get older, well, even when you're younger, there are several things that occur in one's life all the time that you have to deal with and maybe grieve and move on because life continues. So everything's like a lesson, I guess, in life. And there are many examples of that. I'm sure you all have your own. So I'll get the thing rolling here. Here's one
that
made me think.
By the way, for those of you who enjoy tuning into this broadcast for a lighthearted look at life and to escape a bit, who are you?
wait till we get to episode 85. It'll be a home embalming kit that we'll be pushing.
Oh my god.
But here's what made me think of this topic. Last night, well, it's today, but I watched it because at 9 o'clock Pacific time it aired the last episode of Ted Lasso. Now, I don't know any of you who have perhaps been watching this thing. My sweetie Jackie and I have. And it's hard to get me hooked on a show. I mean, I've had a lot of good shows, and sometimes I just lose interest or I forget. But this thing is so beautifully written, such a great story. Everybody knows about that. I'd not have to preach to the choir. I think whether you watch it or not, you've heard about it.
It's been all over the news this morning.
Is it? I didn't check the news
today. Oh, my God, yes.
It is an absolutely beautiful story arc, 3 seasons. And great acting, great writing. And it's something I share with Jackie, and that it's come to an end. And as all good things do, and this really was very sad for me because it was something really to look forward to. And I mean, not everything requires the heavy handedness of talking about moving on, but you do feel a loss when you lose something like that. I truly feel there's an emptiness in my heart. There's a hole in my heart. Come, this is my plea. Come back, Ted Lasso. We need you.
From what I understand, and I have not seen the final episode, but from what people have talked about, it is kind of left up in the air as to whether they could come back. Is that,
well,
without,
you know,
spoilers, is that true in your mind?
If the organ grinder and his monkey hadn't been hit by the street cleaning truck, it could have. No. Hey, you know, good writing. You can do anything you want with good writing. The cast as it was, you know, lightning in a jar, possibly, but some really good actors. They may go in another direction. It won't be the same thing. I'm sure it could be a quality show. And I quite honestly, I think they will. I think the network, Apple TV, regardless of what Jason Sudeikis wants to do, I think they're going to probably, I mean, they never realized.
Do a spinoff, basically?
I think so. I think that, and a lot of characters could have. Matter of fact, yes, a couple things happened that were possibly subtly suggestive that maybe something else would come of it.
See, I've heard a rumor. Don't mark me down for this, but I've heard a rumor that they are going to come back.
No spoiler alerts.
No. They're going to come back, and because, you know, Jason Sudeikis is obviously ready for it to be over, they're bringing it back, and the new coach is going to be Roseanne Barr.
Let me put that on my calendar. I want to make sure I'm out of the house on those nights. Anyway,
every episode will start with her singing "God Save the Queen."
Oh, dear Lord. Dear Lord. Yes. Well, that would be horrible. Anyway, it was a good show. And right now it's like having to, I had a sort of same feeling when James Corden went off the air. I'm watching repeats at night because I had a routine. Every night I had a routine. And it's really kind of unsettling to then have my routine as I had it. It's kind of strange, but it's
we develop a relationship with shows that we like.
We do, including plays. And,
yes, absolutely.
Do you have any experiences about feeling a loss after a show ends, perhaps?
You know, I was thinking that because of my long established relationship with theater, I've been doing it since I was a little kid. I probably am a little numb to this feeling of loss of needing to move on. I know,
is it your cold heartedness? I'm wondering,
it
which
could be that, okay. or lack of heart. I know that for a lot of people who are either in a show or working on a show. Mm-hmm. The end of a show is very traumatic. It's you develop very, very close relationships very quickly, right. Very intensely, working together on a production. And right. When that final show is over, a lot of people feel crushed. I mean, it is a sense of mourning for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when I was much younger, I went through that for a few shows. But no, I don't experience that. I recognize that working on a show is a very transitive thing, and you can develop relationships that are very deep, very meaningful,
right,
but for the most part limited.
Well, that's true.
You
I
know,
wonder
there are exceptions, of course. You and I met in the show, and God knows we keep trying to end it. It keeps going on and on.
But I wonder, part of that is though the two sides of that, being a youthful person and the trauma of that, because you've never had anything else to compare to, and it's been like this momentous, monumental thing in your life. But the other side of the coin is, because you love theater, it's a continuum. You know, there's for you.
You know,
there's always going to be another show. So in your mind, maybe subconsciously, it hasn't ended. Maybe because it's part of the process. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there are shows that I've been very sorry to see end. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, no, I think, you know what I think the deal is that for me, mm-hmm. the true fun, and this is for when I'm in a show as well as directing it. Directing is obvious, but right. for the most fun I have in a show is the rehearsal process.
Right, right.
You know, the performances pay off. You get the feedback. It's a lot of fun to do it in front of people and get reactions. But the real fun, the real meat of it, is the rehearsal process. So the end of a show is almost, if you want to equate it with the death of a loved one, mm-hmm. you know, a sudden death is hard to take.
Right.
There's intense grieving at that point.
Right.
A prolonged death, you know, long illness, God forbid.
Right.
You tend to grieve in small portions as the days go by.
Right.
So the actual death tends to be more of a relief.
Right. Right.
So you're
anticipating it.
You're anticipating it. Nothing's coming as a surprise. You know it's coming.
Right.
And so in the same way, a play, you know, it's basically it starts to die the day it opens, right? I mean, right. Because the work, the intensity of the work, right. And the bonding and everything is going on during rehearsals. Yeah. So it's kind of a, oh, okay, that was nice. That was wonderful. It had its good life. It's over. Time to move on.
To describe the youthful aspect of it, I may have mentioned this earlier in another podcast. Everything in my mind is always another podcast.
That's was when, life.
Because like when I did a Christmas Carol, and we had the, you know, and it was a great experience in my life. I'm grateful to my buddy there, Frank Manano, for having me play that part. It was really wonderful.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
Hey, Frank.
And we had a party when it was over at a restaurant, and everyone's, you know, giving the cards and thanks for doing a great job. And again, as an adult like you, I've been through a lot of shows, so I understand. I mean, I really love that role, and I did miss it, but I wasn't so much grieving as, like you said, moving on. And one of the little kids in the show, the turkey boy, you know, go pick up the turkey and that's hanging in the window.
Yes.
I forget if he played it.
The one as big as me, sir.
Yeah, as big as me, sir. Get off the stage. Don't bother me, sonny. I was saying goodbye, and I looked over at him, and he was near me looking at me, and he was sobbing. And I said, oh, my God. I said, what's going on? And he couldn't even talk. I said, are you crying because the show's over? He's, yeah, I'm gonna really miss working with you. I mean, I had a brief moment with him on stage. He also played the young Scrooge, I think. He's going back with the ghost of the Christmas past. He sees himself, and he was sobbing. So he was grieving, and he was partially grieving me. And it's the funny thing, because sometimes God bless us, sometimes we're just ignorant of the things that are meaningful for others who look up to you, and I had no idea that it meant as much as it did to this kid, and he was crying. So it was very touching for me to see that. Of course, after I left the building, he says, thank God he's gone, beers for everyone.
he was grieving because he was actually pocketing the coins you were tossing him.
That's right.
A major source of income was ended for him.
That's right. I doing the show, I said, hey, backstage people, give me some more change. I don't know what happened. But let's go on to a line that's a little more serious that we can both talk about.
Okay.
Let's talk about, I don't want to get too deep because there's other people involved with this concept, about end of a marriage. We both went through an end of a marriage.
Yeah,
and we had two different experiences.
You see the grin on my face. Best time of my life.
Yes. So I don't want to belabor it. I don't want to have a electronic evidence of anything we can say, but talking about what happened in the aftermath for me, it was very, very painful. And of course, you know, we get over, we move on. There's the dumpy and the dump war. I was the dumpy. And it was like a death. I really couldn't. I almost, you know, to not put a dramatic point on it, but the truth was, and I was young, in my early 20s, mid-20s, I really felt that I couldn't go on. I felt like I wanted to die. And thank goodness I had a lot of people around me who cared for me and, you know, tried to cheer me up. But it was such a depressing, oppressive thing, and I felt this weight. I had a bunch of things that were related to my marriage, picture albums and knickknacks and paddywhacks, and I had them in a closet, and I called it my closet of horror. And I didn't want to throw some certain things away, and I'd walk by the closet.
I want to clear up. It was his closet of horror.
Horror.
He wasn't calling his ex-wife anything bad.
No, a closet of horrors. I had several prostitutes, and on the door it said open door in case of emergency. Horror. And I felt a physiological, it's really so silly to think of it now, but at that time, to walk by that thing and know what its contents were caused it, you know, I couldn't throw this stuff away, but I didn't want to open the door. I didn't want to look at it. So obviously I got past. thank goodness I got past. Everyone has a time of grief, and it takes a certain period of time. The thing that helps get you out of it, of course, is being surrounded by people who care about you. If you're doing this in a vacuum and there's nobody there, I think you could really be quite detrimental to your mental health. But I had good friends. You weren't involved at that time. Yeah, but I'm talking about good friends, so it doesn't really matter.
Besides the point.
Besides the point. So anyway, I got past that, and I met my sweetie now, and I've been with her for 37 years. And it's like you look back at that, it's almost like I understand intellectually what I was feeling, but emotionally I can't put myself back in that place and really recall those exact things, because it seems like it's like a storybook.
Well, you know? Whereas the feelings that I experienced when my marriage broke up, I revisit every day to keep me going, because the sense of happiness and freedom. I wouldn't say that I was the dumper, because my ex-wife dumped all over me. But
you were the dumper. You were the dumpty.
I was the dumpster. I was. So I did broach the topic of divorce to my ex-wife. So I did take that initiative. But the entire marriage was a mistake to begin with. So I knew that. And what I felt was a sense of renewal and freedom when those divorce papers came through.
Interesting. So you had grief, and you had the grief in the middle of getting married.
As she was walking down the aisle, I was grieving my idiotic choices in life. Yes.
When the rabbi said, "Does anybody have anything to
if there were only a rabbi?"
It'd be fun if you raise your hand while walking down the aisle.
Excuse me.
I do.
Oh my! What a terrible mistake. But sometimes the moving on from the end of something is a celebration. You know, it does not have to be a grieving process. It can be a celebration.
But either way, in reference to we were talking about the youthfulness and in theater and a child being upset about that, either way, the experience, yours or mine, is a sense of there's always growth and strength.
There's an end and a beginning. You know, those always go together.
Yeah. But I mean, I actually felt, I think character-wise, in terms of strength of just being able to handle things in life, it was an event that I went through, and it made me realize I can handle those kinds of emotional things. I think as you mature, of course, everything you've experienced that you've gone through successfully, good or bad, adds to your quiver of experience that allows you to be stronger. So I think we get stronger. So we're both stronger for a result of that.
Absolutely. And you know, I think life, I mean, we can go back to the individual examples, but life is filled with endings. I mean, that I don't know if you ever do this, but every now and then I just sit there and think about either a person or a place I worked or you know, maybe a place I went to or something. And it is encapsulated in a part of my life that was a totally separate life from what I am living now. Yeah. And there are a lot of those capsules in my life. There are a lot of separate lives that I have lived in the 65 years that I've been on Earth. And it's looking back, they truly feel completely separate from each other. I know there were transitions.
Right.
But looking back, it's really hard to see those transitions.
Yeah. I think exactly along your point there, that a lot of the stuff that I've gone through, I know it happened, but it does seem almost like a piece of fiction almost.
Yeah.
I know I was a character in that story, but it just doesn't, it feels so remote and so far removed that it's it has nothing to do with any emotional attachment to myself now at all.
Right.
This is looking back.
It's a very strange phenomena.
Yeah. How about we probably talked about this before. Parents. We both lost our parents. Everyone loses their parents.
Everyone does.
I pray to God that it happens in that order, that the parents go first, as it should be, as it should be intended, I think, that you expect your parents to go before you. We have lots of examples where that didn't happen. But in our case, our parents preceded us. And although I've seen you on stage and I've seen you die several times, so I'm not sure. Maybe you did die before your mom and dad. Bum, bum, bum. But that was, you know, I took care of my folks quite a bit near the end there, and won't go into the details. I think I talked about it before, but when they were gone, there's definitely a loss because I was very close. But and there unfortunately or otherwise, there was a sense of relief, and some instances I felt guilty about because there was some health issues that I was having to take care of, and you know, selfishly, that was hard. And yeah, but sure. I had to catch myself sometimes, and apparently it's very healthy and very normal for you to think, dear God, have this end the situation. Not I want parents to die, but just my involvement of this horrible thing. And they are gone, and I don't need to be callous, but you're talking about being numb about things like theater. As I've gotten older, I really feel like I am an island. I'm attached. I can talk to people. I can talk to you and Jackie, but there's a part of me that is aware of the sensation of kind of drifting along, and the things that happen are chapters in the story. And I'm more of an observer. That's why I'm kind of a Zen kind of a guy these days. I really don't get that emotional about things. I mean, with great exceptions, in the moment I get emotional, but there is a sense of being an observer of my own life. And when my parents moved on, I did feel the loss of not just my love and their love for me, but I also sort of grieved a routine. It had a purpose. I had a certain purpose. I would maybe complain about how difficult it was, but it was purposeful and it was fulfilling, knowing I was doing this work, this good deed that for my parents who I loved immensely. And when that was gone, oddly enough, there's a bit of floatiness. Like I said, oh my goodness, I'm sort of unanchored here, unmoored. Mm-hmm. And I got over that, but it was really it was something unexpected. You know, people hint at those kinds of things. I've read books. I've read, my God, remember all the parents getting ill and dying books I had carrying?
Yeah, had quite a few of those.
I've got rid of most of them. I got a few because they're good resources, but yeah, I was kind of floaty, and that's kind of gone away. So again, part of your encapsulation of these moments in your life, even my parents being gone. But you and I talk about the what remains is sort of this weird sensation of being an orphan. That's a whole different topic, but there's a sense when you're by yourself and you're gone, you're used to a whole lifetime of having these parents, and yeah, now you're not, and you're the next in line for whatever lies ahead, you know?
Yeah. So now our experiences, once again, were very, very different. Both of your parents were ill for a good amount of time.
Yes.
And living near you.
Yes.
You know, my dad died very suddenly, very unexpected. I don't like to say unexpectedly. My father had several heart attacks, so we knew that he had heart problems.
Right, right.
But on the other hand, and this is kind of a weird phenomenon in its own right, when you have many life-threatening events happen, mm-hmm, and you come back the same as you were before, which my father did. He had a few different heart attacks, and you know, we always, you know, oh my god, he's dying, and then he would come back. My father was a very vital man, and it was like nothing had happened, including his bad habits, by the way, nothing changed. And when that happens, you become sort of, you expect someone to be immortal. So when my father finally had his fatal heart attack, which was, what do they call it, the widowmaker heart attack, he was dead before he hit the floor, basically. It was a shock. And there was, and he had died. He was a lawyer. He died in court in the middle of a legal argument, and he had a heart attack and died in court.
Well, his client must have been really pissed.
Well, don't even begin to begin. Because we had so many clients sue us.
Oh, really?
He did not complete the contract.
Are you kidding me? Oh, no, my God.
It's a terrible, terrible situation. Anyway, but when he died, it was a shock. Yeah. And I was definitely in shock because of it. And selfishly thinking, because my father was he was the quintessential patriarch of the family. He did everything. He paid bills. He bought us things. You know, my first car, my father bought for me. You know, my he invested stocks for us, you know, and none of us really knew what the hell he was doing, but he was taking care of us constantly. So he was the patriarch. So when he was gone, selfishly, there was that feeling of what is going to happen to this family. So that was really a forward.
So it's a grief thought. And fear at the same time.
It was fear and grief.
We
didn't have time for grief, really. And honestly, the one thing that stuck in my mind constantly during his memorial service was all of these people telling you, and you always hear this, you know, he went the way he wanted to go. He went the way he would have wanted to go. And I hated hearing that. But in hindsight, he went the way he wanted to go. That was the way to go. I mean, my God, yes, he probably had some momentary pain, I'm assuming. But probably not long. And we kid, my siblings and I kid about the fact that, you know, my father would have been 104 this year. And like for the last 20 years, we've been kidding, saying, oh my God, would my father have hated being old? He would have absolutely hated it. He would have been a cantankerous, awful old man. He would have been so miserable. That was, looking back, I can look and say, he did. He went the way he wanted to go. It's a good thing he did. I wish I had had him for longer.
Right.
But that would have been a selfish thing, you know. Now, my mom died after comparatively a very short illness. And the one thing she always said was, I don't want to suffer. I don't want to be put in a home. And when she finally got sick enough to have to be put into a facility.
Right.
It was directly across the street from our family home where my sister was living at the time. So she could literally walk across the street and visit her. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
And she was there, I don't remember exactly how long, but it was less than a month. It was less than a month. And I swear to God, she willed herself to die because she did not want to be a burden on the family. And so both my parents went, and to add to that, I was living 400 miles away. So I got to see her when she was in the hospital, when we kind of knew she wasn't going to come out of this one, but it wasn't like she was dying, you know. She had come through an operation, and it didn't go off as well as we had expected it to. But she was conscious, and she was her. You know, that's what I say. So I got to see her then, and then I came back home, and about 2 weeks later, I think she had passed away, and in her sleep, which, great way to go.
Yeah.
So I really, whereas you had that major grieving for your, both of your parents,
mm-hmm.
I really had the sense of, okay, they're gone. And it was, it was an acceptance. And right. selfishly, I could miss things about visiting with them.
Right, right.
I missed that in my, and I still miss that. You know, I would call my mom every Sunday, kind of fill her in on the week.
Right.
And I miss that.
Right.
And I purposely, if my sister is listening to this, I purposely made a choice, because I talked to my sister quite often on the phone, not to call her on Sundays, because I didn't want it to feel like
a substitution.
I was substituting her for my mom.
Yeah.
But once again, it was not a moving on process for me. It was, that was then, this is now.
Yeah.
I'm really coming off really as a heartless son of a bitch in this.
I'm not going to joke on that. And you're not. I understand, because it's that encapsulation. Maybe the time period for you to encapsulate is more compact and more efficient. And other people go through something. Because again, for me talking about my parents, I'm not grieving. I think back. I make jokes about their deaths now, because you and I do a little dark humor here. I understand that.
Trust me. I had to be a pallbearer for your father.
Yeah.
God, I'm glad that part's over.
When you knocked on the cast and said, "Couldn't you have lost a little weight first?" That was so horrible. You know, talking about your dad went the way he would want to go. I just want to throw that in, that if I was an attorney and I died the way I would like to go, there would have been a bed in court, and I would be I would be helping my client from the bed with my head on the pillow. That's interesting. Now, here's one that's kind of do we have time still? I'm not sure where we're at.
We're kind of out of time, but let's just do one more. Leave it on a little upper note, hopefully.
Okay. Well, this is an interesting one that is could be an ongoing thing. It's a loss of some aspect of health that continues to be a loss as you progress and have to deal with it. I know it's not particularly funny, but I thought it was something really, I wanted to touch on that. That's why I'm bringing it up now.
No, okay. That's
because, okay. Because if you have something, you're mourning the loss of some certain functionality in your body, some vitality that you had that you no longer do. Some people get very depressed and give up the ghost and don't want to live because of that.
Yeah.
I just watched a clip from America's Got Talent, British version, and there's a guy with one leg came out and he had crutches and he was dancing and kicking and swirling. They gave him the only group golden buzzer apparently at that time that the video was posted that had ever occurred. I don't know if there's been another one. So some people overcome that. Some people are born with a defect, a birth defect of some sort, and that's all they know. But I won't talk about anything that I'm going through. Let's assume I've got something wrong with me.
Let's assume we all have something wrong with us. Yes.
And it's a varying degrees, you know, whether it's a cavity, your tooth is hurting you, or you've lost your pancreas is failing. I think that's really interesting. I think humor for me, and I'm sure for you and for a lot of other people, is such a vital thing to keep you going, in the midst of the horrors of anything like that. And so I recommend for people, if you don't have a sense of humor, go out and buy one.
Replace that spleen with a laugh box.
With a joke book. But that, I think that's kind of an interesting thing that I have issues, I have changes. And again, some things are gradual. And so just like things that happen abruptly versus gradually, after a while, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror and you realize, you pull out a scrapbook and you see yourself 20 years later, earlier, and you realize how much you've aged, and you're not aware of it on a day-to-day basis. So I think some things too happen. You accept them, hopefully, and maybe there's no grief because there's the acceptance process can occur over a period of time.
It kind of happens along the way. I mean, I sit there and I think, once again, I am very much a pragmatist. Mm-hmm. I really think if I were to describe myself in any one word, it would be pragmatist. I'm getting older. Things don't work as well as they used to work, you know? But then on the other hand, I see people my age or younger who appear to be doing way worse than I am. And I'm grateful for that.
That sounded bad, but I know what you meant.
I'm grateful that they are doing so badly. No, it's what is it, Schadenfreude. But it's no, but the fact of the matter is, I don't know that it's a grieving process for me personally to see things that I'm not capable of doing anymore or whatever, or take more effort to do. I'd say there's a sense of frustration, you know. I would definitely admit to being very frustrated at times, you know, that it's like, come on, my thumb, it hurts when I do this, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's, you know, the way someone once said, you know, the aches and pains that you experience every day are just a constant reminder that you're still living.
There you go.
And I like to look at that. I like to look at things that way. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I still can feel my body. And I feel that, my elbow hurts sometimes when I lay it down wrong.
It's kind of saying, is the glass half empty or half full? You say it's half full before you drop the glass on the floor.
As they say in Yiddish, it's half full of thesaurus.
Look it up.
I'm not going to bother putting that down there because I probably will spell it wrong. Anyway, I think, you know, we need to move on from this topic.
That's going to make me very sad. I really enjoyed this topic.
You know what? I'm going to be greatly relieved.
I am mourning the loss of this very sad topic. I'm happy now, and that makes me very sad. Oh, I'm so confused. By the way,
make sure you tune in next week when Daryl is here with someone brand new.
Yeah. A psychoanalyst, hopefully. Let's get to the bottom of this. Anyway, thank you for being with us. And hopefully this is entertaining and at least interesting. And we want you to go out into the world, be a blessing.
Be a blessing.
And have a wonderful day.
Have a wonderful day.
And never forget to always keep smiling. Have a good one, everybody. Take care.
Bye, everybody. See you next week. Maybe. Bye-bye. All joking aside.